Getting back to our origin of We the People. Tackling current issues, both political and legal, with common sense. As We the People, we must bring common sense back to make our lives better. Only on Now Media TV.
Welcome to We the People, where we break down the laws that shape our lives and empower you with the knowledge to protect what matters most. I'm your host, Alina Gonzalez-Dockery, and today we are focusing on an issue that touches nearly every family: how to protect your assets and plan the future with confidence. Joining me is attorney Dion Duckett, an experienced estate planning and elder law attorney who has turned personal challenges into professional purpose. With a deep understanding of families caring for aging or disabled loved ones, she guides clients in creating solid legal plans that bring peace of mind and protect what they've worked so hard for to build in their lifetime. Dion, I'm so glad you're here and welcome to We the People. So let's get started talking. I know that we were talking off air about, you know, how life challenges can happen in families that face fear of losing everything that they saved over their lifetime just to afford the long-term care. As we were discussing off air, I believe you've had experiences with your own father with Alzheimer's, and I have my mother with dementia. Many families feel powerless when facing these rising long-term care costs or concerns about whether they're even eligible for, say, Medicaid, and they want to protect their savings or their homes, and often make financial decisions that are probably not the most sound, let's say. What are some of the most common ways people accidentally put their assets at risk when paying for long-term care?
Hi, Lena. I think that's a great question. And I just, before I answer your question, I wanted to thank you for inviting me on the show. I think it's a great opportunity. And it's really important. The education is important. And what you said, asked about mistakes that people make with their finances. I think, first of all, people aren't educated about how much long-term care actually costs. And a lot of people, you know, they say, I'm never going into a nursing home. I'll never put my parents in a nursing home. And then life happens, and you may be in the sandwich generation where you have kids that may be in college or kids you're raising, and then you have parents who now have these needs, and you have to work, and you honestly can't provide the level of care that your parents need. And so then you're faced with the cost. And so I'm in Georgia, and the average cost of nursing home care in Georgia is about $10,000 a month, and it can go even higher than that. And people really don't realize how much it costs. And then in-home care can cost even more if you need 24-hour care. And so then how are people going to pay for it? You know, you can pay for it out of your life savings. You can pay for it with the help of family members. People think that Medicare will pay for it, and it won't. Medicare is the insurance that you get when you retire, and it's based on having paid into the system with your FICA. And so, but Medicaid does. Another way to pay is for long-term care insurance. That's probably the best way, but most people don't have it. And my understanding is the best time to get it is between the ages of 55 and 65. And so when an emergency happens after that, it becomes more difficult to get the insurance, and you may not be, it may be more costly, and you may not be insurable. And so applying for Medicaid becomes a possibility. And there are financial limitations and requirements and asset requirements. Generally, Medicaid is a program that is federally funded but implemented by the states. So each state has its own set of rules and laws regarding the implementation. And so I'm in the state of Georgia, and we generally use the guideline of $2,000 a month in income, but it's adjusted for inflation. So it's probably closer to $3,000 now, and $2,000 worth of assets. So those are the limits. And so one mistake people make is thinking that they could never qualify but with proper planning, you can. The second mistake people make is giving away things. And that can cause a disqualification because many people may have heard of a look-back period. You know, when you apply for Medicaid, it's different in different states, but in Georgia and most of the states, there's a 60-month look-back period, and they're able to request bank statements. They're tied into the IRS, and they're looking to see if you've given away property for the purpose of qualifying for Medicaid. And if you have given away property, you know, you could even, if you take a $300,000 house and sell it for $100,000, then that's a $200,000 gift because it was for less than fair market value. So what they will then do is they will add up all of the things that they consider gifts or transfers for less than fair market value, and they will determine a penalty. And the penalty, they call it a penalty divisor. That's usually about the same amount as, excuse me, the average cost of care. So in Georgia, it's about $10,000 a month. So if you've given away $200,000, they divide that by $10,000, that's going to be 20 months of disqualification that you have to pay at the full rate before you can qualify. So people make the mistake of giving away assets without having a plan or talking to a professional.
And I do see that. And I talk to friends of mine, we're all in the sandwich. So I love that, by the way. I'm going to use that from now on. But it's like even discussing this with friends and clients, I always advise them. I'm like, they're like, well, we'll just transfer the house into our names. Our parents will transfer to us. I'm like, no, because that's a five-year look back in Florida. And I'm in Florida. I'm in Southwest Florida. And we have, like, for Medicaid eligibility, the primary residence actually is excluded for as an asset for determination of that. So it's like I keep advising people, don't just give away the farm. Don't think that. I mean, now, if you're going to do that, let's say in anticipation that, oh, 10 years down the road, I may need long-term care, but I just want my kids to have, I just want to give my assets away now. Okay, fine. Do what you like. But there's better tools out there. You and I both know that. And that's what really I think our listeners or our audience really would benefit from is what plans can they start looking into that would best protect their assets?
Okay. And then I'm glad you mentioned the fact that the primary residence is excluded because it is, but if you haven't planned appropriately for it, for its protection, if Medicaid is paid for care, when the person dies, they want to get paid back. And that's where that Medicaid lien comes into place. And they can put the lien on the house. And that's where people come to me saying, I don't want to lose the house to pay for nursing home care.
Yes.
And so one of the tools that we use, a lot of attorneys refer to it as a Medicaid Asset Protection Trust. It is an irrevocable trust. There's lots of different types of trusts that have lots of different uses. So, but the Medicaid Asset Protection Trust is an irrevocable trust. So that typically means once you put the property in it, you can't take the property out of it. And then the person who's creating this trust and trying to protect it for beneficiaries, they also cannot be the beneficiary. So they can't take the property out. They can still live in it, but the beneficiary would have to be someone else. And like you said, if they ultimately want their children to have it, they can make the children the beneficiary. Mm-hmm. And with that five-year look-back period, they would have to put it in place at a time where they don't feel like they would need nursing home care in the next 5 years. And so then if 5 years and a day goes past, then they apply, something happens, they apply for Medicaid. When you look back 5 years, that's not counted, and it's fully protected. So because it was transferred more than 5 years before applying for Medicaid.
So, and that's the biggest issue, I think, or fear, I would say, that I come across here in Southwest Florida is the Medicaid lien. Because you don't want the government to be able to take whatever little assets, because you want your family to benefit from the work that you've done. So When it would be the right time to begin asset protection planning? Would it be before retirement, or what age would you suggest to your clients that, hey, why don't we start looking into these tools to protect your assets?
I think probably around 50, before retirement. A lot of my clients are coming to me after retirement, but I think you want to plan before something happens and while you still have time to plan. So you don't want to wait until a crisis happens there. And there's two types of planning. There's crisis planning once you're already in a nursing home or going soon, and the proactive. So if we're talking about proactive, you want to do it while you're healthy, but you have to look at things like if you think you're going to move or sell your house or something like that, then you may not be ready to put it in an irrevocable trust that you can't take the property back out. You should definitely look into things like the long-term care insurance, which like my understanding is that between the ages of 55 and 65 are the sweet spot. You can get it younger and you can get it older. And they've got different types of products out there now. They have life insurance, and I'm not a financial person, but I affiliate with a lot of financial advisors and insurance agents. But some of the policies have riders on them that can be used for long-term care. And then if you never use it, it gets added back into your life insurance. And so that might be a worthwhile investment. But for the long-term care planning with the irrevocable trust, you want to do it when you don't expect to need nursing home care for at least 5 years, because the transfer to the trust is a gift for less than fair market value. So it has to meet that 5-year look back period as well. The other thing is if you get a diagnosis like dementia or Alzheimer's or Parkinson's, some of those diagnoses you can live a very long time with. And so as soon as you get a diagnosis like that, then you may want to look into planning. And you definitely want to work with a professional because you can mess things up trying to do things yourself.
Well, thank you, Dion. And these are such excellent examples of what to do and what to expect. And coming up after the break, we'll unravel one of the most confusing parts of elder law. And it is that Medicaid eligibility and long-term planning. I mean, we discussed it. It is a huge iceberg, and we're only touching the tip of it. But coming up next, we're just going to see how we can navigate before it's too late. Tune right back in. Welcome back to We the People. Want more of what you're watching? Stay connected to We the People and every Now Media TV favorite, live or on demand, anytime you like. Download the free Now Media TV app on Roku or iOS and unlock nonstop bilingual programming in English and Spanish. On the move, you can also catch the podcast version right from our website at www.nowmedia.tv. From business and news to lifestyle, culture, and beyond, Now Media TV is streaming around the clock, ready whenever you are. I'm here with attorney Dion Dockett, and we're diving into one of the most misunderstood yet critical parts for planning for the future: Medicaid and long-term care. Many families wait until a crisis hits, only to find themselves buried in rules and red tape and potential financial pitfalls. Dion, viewers don't often realize that Medicaid isn't just for low-income families. It's a crucial safety net that can help protect assets if used correctly. But misunderstanding the rules can cost families dearly. And it's kind of like bringing the conversation we had in our last segment. What does Medicaid actually cover in long-term care, and what are the limits families should know about?
So with the long-term care, Medicaid, and it depends on the state, but Medicaid will pay for the nursing home care. We mentioned that, and in Georgia, Medicaid will not pay for assisted living care. In some states, Medicaid will also cover assisted living. The other thing that you have in some states, Georgia has a waiver program where, and the waiver programs waive the requirement to be in a nursing home. And so a lot of times with those programs, though, the qualifications are usually the same, the income and the, they call them resource limits, but resources is another word for assets. And those, there's usually a longer waiting list for it. It's in Georgia, it's difficult to tell how you get off of the waiting list. Our offices, they do it based on the need and the severity of the person's need. So, I'm trying to think. You so
Well, it is a lot. And I think that's what it is that honestly, it is all income. I mean, it's such a broad base because, and as we were, as you were talking, I was just even reflecting back on conversation like I was having with a friend of mine the other day, and that there's so many misconceptions of what Medicare will provide and cover for and what Medicaid will provide and cover. Such as some people think that, oh, well, Medicare will cover short-term nursing home, you know, and that's not the case, at least here in Florida. It's they'll do after hospitalization rehabilitative care, but not nursing home care. And then it's like you get into, well, what levels of nursing home care do you have? Are you looking at a respite type of care because of certain circumstances, say at home? Where, you know, you can't have an individual stay at the house, but you need them to go somewhere so that they can be cared for, and or are in-home services eligibility. So I think
Yes.
that's what it is. And many people want to stay home because I can tell you right now, my father is one of those that we will never go into a nursing home. Your mother will never go into a nursing home. I don't care what happens. She will stay in her home. And so, how do we deal with that?
Well, I think you have to, we say pray for the worst and plan. No, I'm sorry. Pray for the best and plan for the worst. Because my parents were the same way. They said that they would never put their parents in a nursing home. And my father was a physician, and his mother lived with him, and she had chronic arthritis, and he could not take care of, my parents had divorced, and so he could not take care of his mother, and he couldn't give her the level of care that she needed because of his work. And so he did end up putting her in a nursing home. And at first, she was in a really fancy, expensive nursing home. He was a doctor, he could afford it. And she wasn't happy there because she had always been around black people, and she didn't like the way the food was cooked, and she wasn't, it was just a different environment for her. And so he found an older nursing home. He was working at an inner city hospital, and he found an older nursing home that had more of the people who she was accustomed to. They cooked the food the way she was accustomed to. And it was even better because he was able to visit her every day because it wasn't far from where he worked. So you have to figure out what fits. And so, but what you were saying about what's covered, Medicare, and one of the ways everybody mixes it up to differentiate Medicare and Medicaid is the ending. Aid is help. And so that and at least it helps me remember that aid is the government benefit and Medicare is the government insurance that you have paid into the system for through your FICA. And the Medicare will only pay, at least in Georgia, up to 100 days of rehab. And so you mentioned respite care. Neither of them will pay for the respite care. Medicare in Georgia will pay for hospice. And the 100 days aren't guaranteed because if the nursing home or rehab facility finds that it's not being effective, they will discontinue the rehab. And then you have to go into the long-term care. And so the long-term care is when you expect to stay in the nursing home. And you have to have, yet you have to need assistance with at least two or more activities of daily living. And those include bathing, dressing, eating, transferring from sitting to standing, and so needing the assistance with two or more of those things help you qualify physically. Then, what was the other thing? Over the break, we talked about the income limits, and you mentioned the qualified income trust. Now, states are different on those two things, but in Georgia, we're the same. We use the qualified income trust. What happens if you have more than the allotted income? In Georgia, it's about $2,900 a month. And so if your income is higher than the $2,900, as long as it's lower than the cost of the nursing home care, then you can qualify. So if the nursing home care costs $10,000 and your income is $9,000 a month, you can still qualify. But we use the qualified income trust. Sometimes it's called a Miller trust, and the excess income will have to go in there. It will end up having to be paid out to the nursing home, but it still helps to get all of the other things. When the nursing home takes over and Medicaid is paying, then all of your residents, your food, your services, your medical care are paid for under the long-term care insurance.
Well, and I think that is, and it's interesting. So it's like, fortunately, like my parents have long-term care policy and they bought it back in the early 90s. So they have things that are not offered, I guess, today. And excuse me. And that is, I mean, that was a huge blessing. But I have clients that they have no choice. They have to place their parent in nursing home, fully nursed. And they look at me and they're like, Alina, they take all of their Social Security, they take all of their income, and there's nothing left. And I think that's what scares most of my clients, or even my friends are like, well, if they take everything, how can we supplement their livelihood? You know, as they don't have anything else, you know, and some of these people can have, you know, like you said, we're sandwiched. We have kids in college. We have family. We're working. Then it's like you see a parent that is in a nursing home and doesn't have any extra funds.
So if you are, so I'm not sure what you're getting at. If they had funds, because they will take everything except for a personal allowance, which is about $75 to $95 a month. That's for haircuts. So that doesn't cover much. Now, when it comes to planning, if someone else is contributing, then there's a thing called the special needs trust where a person can provide additional funds for someone who has a disability and needs to qualify for what we call means-tested government benefits like the nursing home Medicaid. And so with that, if a daughter or family member or someone wants to provide funds for another family member who needs to qualify for Medicaid, then they can create a special needs trust, put the funds in there, and so the disabled person or the family member who has the disability can be used to pay for the things that the government doesn't pay for. So if you want to take the person on a vacation, you cannot give them the money for the vacation, but the funds from the trust can pay for the plane ticket. If they need a TV in their room, the funds from the trust can pay for the TV. So you can provide extra funds that way in a special needs trust. And a lot of times in planning, when you're doing your own estate planning, someone might leave, the example I like to use is two sisters who were in their 80s. And so one was in a nursing home and Medicaid was paying for it. So that meant her income and her assets were down below the limit. So if the second sister died and left her, left the sister who was in the nursing home, $10,000, $50,000, if she leaves it to her in her name, then that can bump her off of her assets. All right. So, but if she left it to her in a special needs trust, then those benefits can be for her. They can pay for the extras and she can still qualify for her Medicaid to pay for the nursing home care.
And that's where I was getting at, because like from so many, it's like, well, $75, $90 doesn't go far. Dion, how can our viewers get a hold of you for assistance in long-term planning and trust works that we've been discussing?
Okay, well, I can provide my website, and I'm licensed in Georgia, Maryland, and District of Columbia. So, I can also connect people with other attorneys. But my website is www.ducketlawllc.com, and that's DUCKETT LLC.com. And our telephone number is 404-349-2220.
Thank you. And up next, we'll explore why estate planning isn't just about what happens after death, but how it protects you and your loved ones while you're still here. Tune right back in. Welcome back to We the People. I'm here with attorney Dion Duckett, and we're discussing how estate planning plays a critical role in long-term care. Too many people believe it's something to think about later, but later often comes too late. Estate planning is more than just writing a will. It's about protecting your voice, your wishes, and your family's future while you're still able to make these decisions. Dion, you have been such a wealth of information. How do wills and trusts work together to manage both life care and post-death asset distribution?
Okay, so the way they work together, and I'll talk about two key differences. A will is something that only becomes effective after you die. So it doesn't apply before that. The trust, depending on the trust that you create, if you create a living trust, it's effective while you're alive, because it's created while you're alive, and you implement it while you're alive. That when you have the two of them together, so with a trust, you're always, or typically always, going to have, excuse me, have a what's called a pour over will. And the pour over will is basically the backup plan. Because when you're planning with a trust, you want to transfer most or all of your assets to the trust. It'll help you avoid probate, and it will provide for management of the trust assets. And so, but you will have the will for if you forgot to fund something into the trust. When we say funding, we're talking about transferring property into the trust. Or if you could also inherit something, and your person who left you the property doesn't know you had a trust, so they leave it in your name. And so it can be transferred into the, it may not have gotten transferred to the trust before you passed. The other thing that the will does is trust only deals with property. So the will is where you would designate who serves as the, who nominate who you would want to serve as the guardian for minor children or adult disabled children who are dependent on you. And that's where you would name who you want the court to appoint to take care of that, to also manage the resources or assets that you leave behind for those people. Another thing is that often people think of estate planning only as what happens to my stuff after I die. And so, but estate planning deals with, and we've been talking about long-term care. So what happens if you live? And you don't have to be someone who has to go into a nursing home, but you could lose the ability to manage your own assets. Excuse me. And if that happens, wouldn't you rather have in place the person of your choosing to manage your assets? Or if you need help with managing your care, wouldn't you have the person of your choosing? Wouldn't you prefer to have the person of your choosing to manage your care? If you don't have a plan in place, then your loved ones or neighbors or friends or whoever is helping you out will have to go to court to have someone appointed for you. And that can be costly. You can end up with a family member you don't want in place. You can end up with fighting between family members, fighting over who's going to be appointed. And you can also just end up with a stranger in place. If family members are fighting, often the court will then appoint the county conservator or the county guardian to serve in that role. And then it also is a risk to your assets because the money to pay for the court cost for the conservator or the guardian who are in place are going to come out of your assets.
See, and I always advise my clients or people who come in to for an estate planning consultation, and they go, well, what's the benefit of a trust versus a will? And I tell them, I was like, you know what the best thing about a trust is? You can ensure that you are taken care of in the manner in which you want to be and taken care of in the event of incapacity. And also it avoids the camel's nose entering your business, which basically means court oversight, an audit a year, and I do guardianships. I tell clients all the time, that is what you want to avoid. So I'm so glad that you touched upon that. And so what are some of the biggest legal mistakes families make by waiting too long to put these documents in place or even reviewing maybe in a timely manner their documents to ensure that they are covered?
One of the biggest mistakes is waiting till it's too late. You have to have capacity to do your planning. I often have adult children call and say, I want to do a power of attorney for my mom. And so, but you can't do a power of attorney for someone else. Only the person who's giving the power can create that power of attorney. And you have to have the capacity, the mental capacity, to be able to do that. So you have to do it while you're well. You know, my father actually had Alzheimer's when he did his planning, but his Alzheimer's was very slow progressing. So he still, in order to create a will, you have to know, they say, who your family members are and the objects. So that would be the objects of your bounty and what your bounty is, your what assets you own. And so my father probably died knowing how much money he had in the bank. But so when it comes to dementia and Alzheimer's, they have what you call moments of lucidity. So you can do your planning as long as at the time, you know, if you're using an attorney, you meet with the attorney and the attorney is clear that you know who your family members are, you know who your what your assets are, and you know what you want to do with them, then you can convey that information and do the planning. And then, but not just on that day, at the signing, you also have to know. So if you meet with an attorney and then you wait a long time to follow up, and now the person has gotten worse and doesn't have the capacity to sign the document. So you have to understand when you make the plan, and then you have to understand when you execute the plan. And so, like I said, when you have a diagnosis of dementia, as long as you have that period of lucidity, so you want to come if you're working with a family member. If they're better in the morning and more alert in the morning, then have your appointment in the morning. Mm-hmm. If it's better in the afternoon, then that's when you want to do it. And also, usually, and you shouldn't get offended, the attorney is obligated ethically to make sure that the person is not being pressured into doing this. So usually family members do come, and I ask them to sit in the waiting room while I meet with the person who's making the plan. And so, because that's the other thing, a lot of times someone who has mental impairments will defer to the other people in the room. And that's an easy tell. Same thing with Zoom, you know. I have Zoom meetings sometimes, and the family member, I ask them to leave the room, but you can tell the person's looking over there trying to get the answers. And so capacity is a big issue, and you don't want to wait until the person has lost capacity. And it's not an age thing per se. Young people are in car accidents. You know, we had a friend of the family who was just 27 years old and was in an accident with a drunk driver who was a head-on collision. He was driving on the wrong lane in the highway, and he was in a coma. And so now when the parents are, and he had just gotten a new job, new apartment bills, new cable bills, all those bills, and now he fortunately he woke up, but when they were trying to manage those finances and not let them get out of hand, the cable company said, where's your power of attorney? Where's your authority to do what you can't just, you just can't call up. If your son or daughter is an adult, you can't just call the bank or the cable company or the apartment complex and say, I want to cancel this lease. So, so planning when someone turns the age of majority, it could be a college student. Once they're 18 years old in most states or 21 in some states, then you no longer have the right or obligation to make the decisions for them, and they have to give you permission. So even your college students, you may want to at least put powers of attorney in place for them.
Okay, I love that you said that because I tell that all the time. The moment your child turns 18, get that power of attorney and healthcare surrogate form signed. And most of the kids are seniors in high school when they turn 18. So it's right. Definitely a protection. When we come back, we'll wrap up with practical smart strategies for paying for care beyond Medicaid and how to make sure your plan truly works for you and your family. Tune right back in after this. Welcome back to We the People. Don't miss a second of this show or any of your Now Media TV favorites, streaming live and on demand whenever and wherever you want. Grab the free Now Media TV app on Roku or iOS and enjoy instant access to our lineup of bilingual programs in both English and Spanish. Prefer podcasts? Listen to We the People anytime on the Now Media TV website at www.nowmedia.com. TV. Covering business, breaking news, lifestyle, culture, and more, Now Media TV is available 24/7, so the stories you care about are always within reach. In our final segment, we're rounding out our conversation with attorney Dion Duckett, and I don't know about you, but I have been learning so much. And we're exploring the smart and strategic ways to pay for care legally, safely, and with peace of mind. See, families often feel trapped, believing their only options are to pay out of pocket or lose everything. But there are more choices than most people realize, and with the right legal guidance, they can preserve both care and financial stability. So, Dion, what legal strategies can help families combine private funds, insurance, and other programs to pay for care for themselves or for their parents and loved ones?
So we talked about the Medicaid Asset Protection Trust and the Special Needs Trust, and you may want to do a combination of that. And it also depends on the level of assets, because you don't have to transfer, like if you're planning proactively 5 years in advance, you don't have to transfer everything into a Medicaid Asset Protection Trust. You may want to leave some things in a revocable living trust that you can continue to manage, but then when something happens, you might have to spend down. You know, with crisis planning, there's a different strategy when you don't have 5 years. Having the long-term care insurance will also allow you to plan. One of the things by having long-term care insurance, you want to make sure you have enough. Usually the levels will pay for a daily benefit. And so you want to look at how much that daily bill benefit translates into monthly. So you multiply by 30 or 31, and usually the nursing home costs and things are also given to you as a daily rate. But you want to make sure you have enough, because if you and the length of time, because if you haven't put things into a Medicaid Protection Trust, but you have long-term care insurance in place and you have a diagnosis that doesn't make you physically ill, that you might be able to live a long time but still need advanced care, then the insurance, the long-term care insurance, can pay for the nursing home protection and give you time to spend down. And so that's one way to combine the different things. Another thing that I have seen happen a lot. A lot of times I have married couples where they both may have had a long-term care insurance policy, and then one of them decides to stop paying for it because they're tired of, they aren't using it, and they're tired of the rates going up. And then they get a diagnosis of dementia or Alzheimer's or Parkinson's, and now they can't get insured. And that's what insurance is. It's for just in case. And so I think long-term care insurance is one of the best ways to pay for long-term care, but there is a cost related to it.
Now, let's just suppose you have a family member that is providing the care at home. So I'll use the example of, let's say a couple decides to take in the one of the parents or both parents on both sides, and they are providing the care. They're the caregivers. Is there a way for them to be compensated? Because most often they're going to have to leave their job in order to provide for the needs of the individual at the house.
Yes, and that's on a state-by-state basis. But you can enter into a legal caregiver agreement where that person, the family member, can be paid. But you have to have it in writing. You have to have a valid contract where that person is providing services and getting compensated for it. And an elder law attorney can assist you with that.
I mean, based on your expertise, and I have to say, I'm so impressed that you're in three jurisdictions. So that even provides such a breadth or wealth of information and experience. So when you're looking at these caregiver agreements, and what is your best advice to someone, or what are the terms that you usually suggest to your clients when you're preparing these agreements for them?
So in preparing it, it's really a case-by-case basis, and you have to make sure that the care that's being provided is something that's related to what the disability is, because again, with qualifying for long-term care Medicaid, you have to need assistance with activities of daily living. So the services that are provided have to be related to the activities of daily living, and the compensation can't be unrealistic or unreasonable. So you have to make sure that how the caregiver is being compensated would be acceptable by the court.
And so let me ask this. So let's say an individual doesn't have a care agreement. They are the caregivers. And is there any way, like through Medicaid or through Medicare or other assistance, or government assistance, will assist with supplementing their income as a caregiver?
Now, I haven't had a lot of experience with those programs, but there are some of those programs out there that will pay for a family member to care for someone who has a need for long-term care.
I'm sorry, it just jumped in my head because I just started thinking of a client. I was like, oh, I got to look into this. So these are why I love having attorneys such as yourself come on my show, because though I have some perspective from my own practice and assisting clients, I mean, I've been wanting to write notes down, and I'm very excited for our replays of this show. Now, one of the things you keep mentioning is to make sure that you have the right professionals or the right team in making these long-term plans. What should people look for in legal or financial professionals, excuse me, I can't seem to talk today, who specialize in long-term planning, if they're not going to you, of course?
Well, thank you for that. I think you need to make sure that you're not going to a general practitioner. The rules are complicated, and, you know, when it comes to long-term care, and that's with anything. With a doctor, you're not going to go to a foot doctor to deliver your baby. So I think that you, when it comes to long-term care, you want to look at somebody who does estate planning and works with wills and trusts, but you also want to look for someone who specifically deals with elder law. And elder law encompasses so many different things. So that can be nursing home litigation. I don't do that. I'm a transactional attorney. So you want to find out, do they do the planning for qualifying for long-term care benefits? And you want to make sure of that. Same thing with your insurance professionals or your financial professionals. Ask them if they work with long-term care products and what types of different types of products they recommend. You may want to, when it comes to financial advisors, you can get referrals from attorneys, and you can get referrals for financial advisors. I think I mixed it up.
No, I know what you
You
mean.
can ask a financial advisor to refer an attorney, and you can ask your attorney to refer financial advisors, because a lot of times they work with people who complement what they do. And so, but you want to make sure that they have a background in not just the estate planning, because there are a lot of estate planning attorneys who do not do the long-term care planning. We use the same tools, trust, wills, powers of attorney, but there are very specific rules, and complicated rules. It's easy to make a mistake.
And that's what you really truly want to avoid at best. It's always going to the right expert who fits your needs. And you said it so eloquently. You're not going to go to a foot doctor if you're having a baby. So if you want a specialist for your needs, and you want to ensure that that specialist, which attorneys are specialists in different areas, and it's not just a broad-based area. There's very, subcategories to every category. Dion, this has been incredibly valuable. Where can people follow your work and continue this conversation with you, especially if they're in Georgia, DC, and was that Maryland as
Maryland.
well?
Yep.
Please give our audience your contact info.
So I have a website, www.ducketlawllc.com. That's DUCKETT LawLLC.com. And our telephone number is 404-349-2220. And I also have some videos that compare the Revocable Living Trust and the Medicaid Asset Protection Trust on my YouTube channel, which is Duckett Law LLC. So I have some videos there.
Well, and that is so helpful, because I find that, and I have to say, I have to develop my YouTube channel for that. But having those videos and those resources are so beneficial. And I know my audience is going to be very interested and will learn a great deal from you being on my show. So thank you so much, Dion, for sharing your expertise and compassion with us today. You've shown that with the right legal guidance, families don't have to face aging, illness, or care decisions with fear. They can face them with confidence. And to our viewers, planning ahead isn't about expecting the worst. It's about protecting the best of what you've built. I'm your host, Alina Gonzalez Dockery, and this has been another episode of We the People. Stay informed, stay empowered, and remember, knowledge of the law is the power to protect your life. I'll see you next time.